Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Talking about part 6, chapter 25. What's this about him going away without an explanation? And I'm super sus about Anna now. Is she just saying, yes, go, I'm just going to hang out and read books? But really, she's going to get shit-faced on morphine. That previous chapter really skewed my perception of Anna. Changed her, my perception, I should say. It didn't even skew it. It flipped it. Now I'm super sus about her. I'd love to... Oh, I don't really want to reread this book. Not anytime soon. Maybe one day. But I feel like if I did, it would read very differently, knowing what we know now. I Am Norwegian said, I enjoyed your heroin tangent, Ander. There's a lot of addiction in my family, so I've strayed far away from anything that could give me the feeling of everything is okay, this is exactly what I need. I had not expected Anna turning into something of an intellectual. The only problem is that she seems to be doing everything mostly for Vronsky. But their life is going better than I had assumed for the previous few chapters. It's not just a thin veneer of happiness. Waraka Akbar. Hey, there's a name I haven't seen for a while. Welcome back to the show. Waraka Akbar says, fell way behind due to the holiday break, but finally caught up. Anna has seemingly become pretty indifferent about life, except apparently literature. Is it the peacefulness of rural life or morphine addiction? Hard to say at this point, but I'm leaning towards the latter. Sluggy with 3 G's said, I think we're beginning to see the toll of this type of life, what it's taking on Anna and Vronsky's relationship. They each seem engaged with their various activities, but they don't seem to be doing much together. Every time Vronsky wants to leave and go somewhere, it becomes an argument. He's a little relieved when Anna doesn't engage him during their last encounter, but I think it's reminiscent of how Anna and Karenin communicated or failed to do so. At the beginning of the book, I think the last line of the chapter is the most telling. I can give her everything, but not my male independence. This attitude stands in direct contrast to Levin's attitude towards Kitty. Rather than continuing to think of Kitty and himself as separate beings, he realizes that they are one and the same, and that doing injury to Kitty is only injuring himself. I Am Norwegian said, I actually thought their relationship seemed better. Of course, Anna is way too dependent on Vronsky for her self-value. But she's reading and learning, involving herself in what Vronsky cares about, and she's so good at it that he's coming to her for advice. He wants and respects her opinion. Contrast this with the end of their time in Italy, or before, when they were both drowning in their own misery because of the implications of Anna deciding to stay with Vronsky. It was a weird chapter. Like, why is she suddenly this knowledge expert and a heroin addict? Right? Like, just a 180 of what her character was. And I don't have a clear picture of their relationship at all. I just don't feel like I don't see the dynamic between them. Chapter 26. Let's keep reading. In September, Levin moved to Moscow for Kitty's confinement. He had already been living there a whole month without occupation when Sergius Ivanich Koznishev, who had an estate in the Kashin province and took a great interest in the forthcoming elections, prepared to attend them. He asked his brother, who had a vote for the Selesnev district, to accompany him. Levin had also some very important business to attend to in Kashin for his sister who lived abroad. It was in connection with a wardship and the receiving of money due to her for land transferred to the peasants. Levin was still wavering, but Kitty, who had noticed that he was dull in Moscow and had advised him to go without saying anything to him, ordered for him the uniform necessary for the occasion, which cost 80 rubles. And it was these 80 rubles paid for the uniform which chiefly decided him, so he went to Kashin. Levin had been 5 days in Kashin, going daily to meetings and taking a great deal of trouble over his sister's business, which he was still unable to arrange. The marshals of the nobility were all busy with the elections, and he could not get even the simple matter in connection with the wardship settled. The other business, that of getting the money paid, also met with obstacles. After long efforts to get an injunction removed, the money was all ready to be paid out, but the notary, a very obliging man, could not give the warrant because it needed the president's signature, and the president was engaged at the session and had not appointed a substitute. All these worries, the going from place to place, conversations with very kind good people who quite understood the unpleasantness of the petitioner's position, but were unable to help him, and all of these efforts, which yielded no results, produced in Levin a painful feeling akin to the vexatious helplessness one experiences when trying to employ physical force in a dream. He felt this frequently when talking to his very good-natured legal adviser. This legal adviser seemed to do all that was possible and to strain every nerve to get Levin out of his difficulties. "Look here," he would say, "just try this. Go to so-and-so and to so-and-so," and the adviser would make an elaborate plan to circumvent the fatal difficulty which was at the root of all his trouble, but he would immediately add, "All the same, you'll be put off. However, have a try." And Levin tried and went again and again. Everybody was kind and amiable, but still it turned out that what he wanted to circumvent started up again in another place and impeded him once more. It was specially annoying to Levin to be quite unable to understand with whom he was contending and whom the delay in his business could profit. No one, not even his lawyer, seemed to know this. If Levin could have understood it, as he understood the reason for having to stand in a queue at a booking office, he would not have felt hurt or vexed. But no one could explain to him the reason for the obstacles he encountered in these business transactions. However, Levin had changed considerably since his marriage. He had become patient, and if he did not understand why things were arranged thus, he told himself that, not knowing everything, he could not judge, and that probably things had to be so, and he tried not to be indignant. And now, being present at the elections and taking part in them, he also tried not to condemn, not to dispute, but as far as possible to understand the matter on which good and honest men, whom he respected, were engaged with so much seriousness and enthusiasm. Since his marriage, so many new and serious aspects of life had been revealed to him, which, owing to his superficial acquaintance with them, had formerly seemed unimportant, that he anticipated and looked for a serious meaning in this election business also. Koznishev explained to him the meaning and importance of the changes anticipated as a result of the elections. The Marshal of the Nobility for the province, in whose hands the law placed so much important public business, wardships, such as the one about which Levin was now in trouble, the care of enormous sums of money belonging to the nobility, public schools for boys and girls, military schools, elementary education according to the new law, and finally the Zemstvo, the Marshal of the province, Snetskov, was one of the old types of nobles. He had run through an enormous fortune, was a kind man, honest in his way, but quite unable to understand present-day requirements. He also sided with the nobility in everything, openly opposed the spread of popular education, and gave a class character to the Zemstvo, which should have such enormous importance. It was necessary to put in his place a fresh, up-to-date, practical, and quite new man, and to manage matters so as to extract from the rights granted to the nobility, not as nobles, but as an element of the Zemstvo, all the advantages of self-government which could be obtained from them. In the wealthy province of Kashin, always ahead of all others, such forces were now assembled that, if matters were here managed as they should be, it might serve as an example to other provinces and to the whole of Russia. The affair was therefore of great importance. To replace Snetskov as Marshal, Sviatsky was proposed, or better still, Nevedovsky, an ex-professor, a remarkably intelligent man and a great friend of Koznishev's. The session was opened by the governor of the province, who, in his speech to the nobles, told them that in choosing occupants for posts they should show no partiality, but should choose according to merit and for the welfare of the country, and that he hoped the honourable nobility of Kashin would strictly fulfil its duty, as it had done in previous elections, and would justify their sovereign's high confidence in them. Having finished his speech, the governor left the hall, and the noblemen, noisily, vivaciously, some of them even rapturously, followed him out with enthusiasm, and stood around him as he was putting on his fur coat and talking in a friendly way with the marshal of the province. Levin, wishing to enter fully into everything and not miss anything, stood there too in the crowd and heard the governor say, "Please tell Mary Ivanovna that my wife is very sorry she has to go to the orphanage." Then the noblemen gaily scrambled for their overcoats and all drove to the cathedral. In the cathedral, Levin, with the others, raised his hand, repeating the words of the priest, and swore by the most awful oaths to fulfill all the things the governor had hoped for. Church services always touched Levin, and when he was uttering the words, "I kiss the cross," and looked around at the crowd of young men, young and old, who were repeating the same words, he felt moved. On the second and third days, matters were dealt with concerning the funds of the nobility of the girls' high schools, which Koznishev explained were quite unimportant. So Levin, busy going from place to place on the business he had in hand, did not trouble about them. On the fourth day, the audit of the provincial funds was undertaken, and now, for the first time, there was a conflict between the new and old parties. The commission entrusted with the task of auditing reported to the assembly that the sums were all correct. The marshal of the nobility rose and, with tears in his eyes, thanked the nobility for their confidence. The nobles loudly applauded him and pressed his hand. But at that moment, one of the nobles of Koznishev's party said he had heard that the commission had not audited the funds, considering that the verification would be an insult to the marshal of the province. A member of the commission imprudently confirmed this. Then a small, very young-looking but very venomous man began saying that probably the marshal of the province would be pleased to account for the funds, and that the excessive politeness of the members of the commission was depriving him of that moral satisfaction. Thereupon the members of the commission withdrew their report, and Koznishev began very logically to prove that they must admit either that they had audited the account or that they had not done so, and to elaborate this dilemma. A speaker of the opposite party replied to Koznishev. Then Sviatsky spoke, and then the venomous gentleman once more. The debate continued for a long time and did not come to any conclusion. Levin was surprised that they disputed about it so long, especially as when he asked Koznishev whether he thought that money had been misappropriated, he received no reply. He received the reply, "Oh no, he is an honest fellow. But this old-fashioned patriarchal and family management of the nobility's affairs must be put to a stop." On the fifth day, the election of the district marshals took place. For some of the districts, the election was stormy enough, but for the Selezinsk district, Sviatsky was elected without opposition, and he gave a dinner party at his house that evening. All right, there we go. Another chapter done. Thanks very much for listening. I will see you tomorrow.